Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Gail Sylvia, your host of SylviaGlobal.com. I am so excited today. You know, most of us are familiar with the seven wonders of the world. I actually believe there are eight and more, and among them is our special guest, Judy Belk. Judy Belk is the Senior Vice President for Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors, RPA. She oversees the agency's three regional offices in Chicago, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. The Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors advises and manages more than $2 million in annual giving, and it has exceeded several billion dollars over time in giving. Judy, she's quite an incredible lady because she went from the government, working in the government, and has always been intrigued by private sector and has landed one of the most influential positions in the area of philanthropy that we could ever imagine. And so, Judy, thank you so much for being here today. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Gail. It's great to be here.
So nice to hear your voice. So very nice. Judy, talk to us about your background so our audience will know, you know, a little bit more about, you know, what influenced you growing up, you know, and what led to this road that you're on today.
Oh, thanks, Gail. First of all, I'm delighted to be here, especially to talk about my passion, philanthropy. And one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about philanthropy, it's a big old word, and I know that there's always a tremendous amount of talk about how to be more strategic and metrics and the billions that are flowing into the philanthropic sector. But I always try to remind donors that I work with about the end user. And I can't think of a better poster child for the benefits of strategic philanthropy than myself. I grew up in Alexandria, Virginia, outside of Washington, D.C., before it was a tourist destination. And as I think about my early life, I really was a beneficiary of really good strategic philanthropy. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for philanthropy. Early on, as I was being educated, my parents played a huge role in making a decision to try to get my sister and I in our neighborhood school. We're African Americans, and when I was growing up, I'm of the age where the state of Virginia had very strange ideas about educating folks who looked like me. And my parents participated in a court case to integrate the Alexandria Public Schools. Well, that court case was funded by local philanthropists, primarily from the white Jewish community, who joined with the African American community to ensure that my sister and other African Americans in Alexandria got to go to public school or have access to public education. That was one example. The second example was that my first introduction to the arts was as a result of a generous gift of a philanthropist in Alexandria who provided funds for young people to go and see a professional arts performance. And I remember sitting in the National Theater in Washington, D.C., seeing the opera Carmen, and that began a lifelong interest in the arts. And then I went on to college. I went on to Northwestern University outside of Chicago as a result of funding and scholarship money that was provided by philanthropists. So I could go on and on about how my life has been enriched by philanthropy. And I would say, Gail, I didn't at that time. I didn't know many of the generous donors who supported me. Didn't know very much about philanthropy, but those early experiences certainly got me excited about using my talents and my skills to give back. And so I've now worked in government, in the private sector, and now for Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors as a nonprofit. And I would say the thread that goes through my life has been this desire to give back and to help people give back.
Well, this experience that you described with the relationship of the Jewish community supporting mm-hmm. a civil rights issue that affected African Americans,
mm-hmm.
do you see any connection today or affiliations with African American philanthropists and Jewish philanthropy?
You know, I see connections not only with the Jewish community and the African American community, but what I'm seeing more and more are a variety of communities of color, folks from different backgrounds reaching across and going outside of their community to offer a helping hand to other communities. I think the tradition of the Jewish community's involvement in support of the civil rights community is just one example of that. I mean, when you really think about philanthropy, that's really what philanthropy is all about. It's really using your resources to help someone outside of your family, outside of your comfort zone or your community for the greater common good. And I think that's what's so extraordinary. And I see examples all the time. I mean, I don't know who was the philanthropist who provided resources for my college education, and I've often, you know, wanted to really thank that person. But there are just so many examples of that across really the country, across the world, of folks who are saying, I don't know this person, I'm not from this community, but I want to give a helping hand.
Where are the, you just referenced, you know, cultural groups now extending their mm-hmm. reach beyond just the immediate culture or community mm-hmm. that they're affiliated with. Mm-hmm. Give us some examples of where you're seeing that shift occurring.
Yeah, Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors has really been quite interested, and we've devoted a lot of time and effort, in addition to us helping philanthropists, individual philanthropists, with their own giving. We also spend a lot of time really talking about trends and best practices in the field of philanthropy, doing a lot of research and a lot of writing. And many of those resources are on our website at www.rpa.org or rockpaw.org. One of the big stories of philanthropy is that as our demographics have changed, that has also changed the face of philanthropy. So a few years ago, we decided to start documenting these changes and really developed a directory of community of color philanthropic engines, of women funding initiatives, as well as funding initiatives in the LGBTQ community. The idea was to, one, emphasize that many of these communities that are often viewed as, quote, recipients of philanthropic dollars are actually also have strong cultures of giving, from, you know, Native Americans to African Americans to women. And we've really tried to lift that up. Most recently, we've been involved with a major initiative called D5, which is a major initiative supported by foundations in the U.S. to really promote and stress the importance of equity and diversity in the field of philanthropy. And in last November, we hosted a D5 hosted a convening of diverse philanthropists here in Los Angeles, and the next convening will be held in the Midwest, November 15th in Chicago, and this is an opportunity to celebrate diverse giving, to bring together diverse donors.
And that's hosted by the Rockefeller Advisory?
It's actually hosted by the D5 Coalition. Mm-hmm. And folks can find out more information at www.d5coalition.org. Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors is a proud partner with the coalition. We serve as the national office, so the program is housed with us, but this is really a coalition of some of the largest foundations in the country committed to really promoting diverse giving, promoting more equity of philanthropic dollars, so organizations from the California Endowment to the Rockefeller Foundation to the Marguerite Casey Foundation, the Kellogg Foundation, are all part of this coalition. RPA has been working with D5 specifically on raising the profile and celebrating individual donors and philanthropists. And in fact, we also just produced a terrific video called I Am a Philanthropist, where we went out and we talked with individual philanthropists of color and women and from the LGBT community, asking them to share their individual philanthropic journey as diverse donors. And that video can be accessed on YouTube. It can also be accessed on the D5 website and the RPA website at www.rockpa.org.
We also plan to feature it on the sylviaglobal.com website so that our audience can see the diversity for themselves and also hear those messages that you're referring to. I guess as I listen to you, one of the questions that comes to mind is, when our experience in as being philanthropists, we being our family, was that we never saw, you know, publicly, mm-hmm. Other than, you know, entertainers and athletes, mm-hmm. you know, occasionally, we never saw other people who look like us prominently in those positions of giving. We knew they existed, but we mm-hmm. didn't see them. So as I listen to you talk about this wonderful event that celebrates diversity, at what point does that go out to the public to also see, you know, other than just seeing it amongst ourselves? Because now I am meeting more people of, you know, from other races that are, you know, also giving and doing it in big, bold ways, but we're kind of still in this little isolated group. And others don't. We're so quiet about, you know, the work that we do.
Right. That's a really good question, and I think there's a growing number of us, and I count you among that, Gail, who really are saying that we really need to elevate and really talk about giving not only in the African American community, but also in the Latino community. And
exactly.
I think there are. I think there are a couple of things. One, that's been challenging, and then there are a couple of things that actually, you know, inspire me. One, I think, as I mentioned earlier, sort of jokingly, philanthropy is a really big word. It's a mouthful, and I think through the media and through tradition and history, we have not kind of owned that word, meaning communities of colors and others. We've let others decide who is a philanthropist and who is not a philanthropist. So when I went out and interviewed many of these philanthropists for the I Am a Philanthropist video, what I kept hearing over and over again was, Judy, oh, I'll be happy to talk about giving, but I'm not a philanthropist. And in fact, saying I feel uncomfortable with that terminology. And it became such a joke that I started having all of the folks I interview actually say to the camera, I am a philanthropist. And I kept saying, now say it and own it. I am a philanthropist. Thus, we named the video, I Am a Philanthropist. So part of it is just the terminology, and when we peel the onion, folks would say, well, I think I'm a community activist, or, you know, I'm, yes, I give, but that I don't give millions. And as you know, and certainly we believe it at RPA, just, you know, the act of giving consistently and doing it in a strategic sort of way can make you a philanthropist. So that's one word, the terminology, one that the general mainstream media that defines the word has to realize that there has to be a really inclusive lens. And we've been working hard on that. I just participated this year in a major article that Reuters did on African-American giving as a result of a major report that RPA put out with the Kellogg Foundation, really documenting the fact that there's a tremendous amount of giving within the African-American community. In fact, African-Americans give a higher percentage than any other group in terms of per capita of income. So that's one issue. The other issue is really getting data about the trends of giving, not just talking about it in sort of anecdotal, but actually getting facts. And we've started, that in a community like Los Angeles, where Liberty Hill, with support from Liberty Hill Foundation, which is a great foundation promoting giving and supporting community giving, launched a major research study on giving in the African-American community in Los Angeles. And it was done by an amazing researcher from the University of Southern California, and her findings were just amazing. One, she said, black giving is very complex. There's a difference in terms of giving from older African-Americans and the younger. And the whole idea of when we talk about giving and black giving, quite often many immigrant black communities don't feel part of the discussion, and there's a lot of growth in diaspora giving. So it was fascinating. So part of it is that we just have to get the facts and start getting those facts out in the community. And then we hope with videos that we're doing, there's been a great book out on African-American giving that's gotten a lot of publicity. But it's not only African-American. We need to do this. The Latino community, the Asian community, LGBT community, and others to start really talking and putting a face on our giving.
Putting a face on our giving, that's actually the mission here of Sylvia Global and how it evolved. You know, when you and I first met a year ago, it was because I was on a personal, kind of study tour a learning tour across the nation to learn more about this realm of philanthropy. And you are so on point. We have guests that have been on our show. You can listen to it on Sylvia Global Radio on the website, who are prominent in their field, and many of them are prominent in the public eye as entertainers. Mm-hmm. And when I ask the question, do they see themselves as a philanthropist? The answer usually was, "Oh no, not me."
Right.
You know, they don't. We don't connect with that word. Yet we do the work that's associated, that defines that word.
Right.
And so it's kind of interesting too. As a result, Sylvia Global launched, and we're in we just launched it on July 19th. I am a philanthropist. You know,
that is great.
Campaign.
So good minds think alike.
And also, you know, when we think alike, Judy, it's because we see the problem and we're not afraid to call it what it is and start addressing it with solutions.
Right.
You know, we're not what you're describing with the work that you're doing and many others, you know, between the Margaret Casey Foundation and those members of D5, along with the study like that of the Liberty Foundation, is so reaffirming in understanding that we've got something important that needs to get out to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, let's put some research behind it, as you've defined, that study with the Liberty Hill. And no matter how complex it is still a fact that we exist and we are philanthropists, and that the word philanthropy, with all of its, you know, cumbersome components in history, is still a very relevant term to these diverse groups that you just mentioned, you know, and it goes across the board. You know, I've had guests on the show who are in every category that you just described, from, you know, the Asian American, Latinas, and others on, and asking some of these same questions. You know, what do we have to do so that others see, you know, not to be visible for the purpose of self-promoting, but to be visible for the purposes of reassuring and encouraging.
I agree. And I have just a few other tips that people can think about and actually start doing tomorrow. One is really talk to your children and your family and friends about your giving. And when I talk about giving, not only giving dollars, which is definitely, you know, important, but also how you give your time. I've been more intentional about telling, you know, my kids when I'm at a board meeting and why that's important. You know, maybe putting, you know, a jar out on the table for, you know, all that loose chain, and say, you know, let's put all the loose chains and then decide, you know, how we're going to give those dollars out, if something for young people to think about. So really making philanthropy as part of the family discussion, you can start talking about what you do there. Second, we also know that as we talk to many philanthropists, they are interested in having discussions about their philanthropic goals with their financial planners. And I would just encourage individuals that as you're thinking about your trust plans, as you think about your investment plans, bring philanthropy in the discussion. And if your financial advisor is not open to that, find another financial advisor who is. The other big issue that is really important is be intentional and thoughtful about how you can use your role on boards of nonprofits to promote philanthropy in general. One mission of D5 is to try to get more folks of color, more women, more LGBT folks actually sitting on boards of foundations, because foundations hire the CEOs. They make a point of deciding what the guidelines are. I just recently joined the Cerdna Foundation, which is a family foundation with assets of $1 billion. It's the Andrus family, but they, as a foundation, made a decision that they wanted to add two or three non-family members to add diversity and different points of view. So I would hope that folks would be open to that. We need to get more folks of color in the ranks of professional development fundraisers, because that's a key to reaching out to diverse philanthropists. So those are just a few examples that we can all begin to think about how we can make philanthropy touch all parts of our lives.
Judy, I hope that you will come back on the show very soon. We haven't begun to touch upon, probably at least 10 more questions that I have. I think that the tips that you just shared with the audience are extremely valuable, and I hope that they will take them to heart and understand the importance that you're placing upon them, because those are the very tips that will start to shift our presence and our understanding and our influence in the bigger world of philanthropy and what it means. What are the traditional philanthropic behaviors of one ethnic group versus another ethnic group? And I just want to give you a chance to shine some light on that, and how is it shifting?
Yeah, you know, we're just really beginning to understand that. Which we also try to stress, is that there's not a lot of difference in terms of the most important part of philanthropy. Across all ethnic groups, all culture groups, folks really want to believe that their dollars are going to be leveraged in an effective and in a strategic way. And so all donors are struggling with the onslaught of needs with the limited resources they have. One that we know that there are, some groups that are more interested in giving as a group. There seems to be a real interest in giving circles among some Asians and African-American communities. I think African-Americans and Latinos and Asians who are straddling both resources to give with high needs of their community are often torn about wanting to support the needs of their community, but also being interested in broader issues outside of their community. I mean, I will always give to the African-American community, but I also have interests in supporting the arts and supporting the environment and others. And we hear often from many donors of color about being, how do you balance that need? So those are just, a couple of examples, and we're just beginning to do a lot more research. There's probably been more research done on the giving differences, for women, and we're just beginning with this study that was just commissioned in Los Angeles on giving trends and interests of the African-American community. We're just beginning to get a better understanding, but we need to do a lot more research in that arena.
Judy Belk, Senior Vice President for Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors, thank you so much for being with us today here on Sylvia Global.
Gail, thank you so much for the invitation.
It's our pleasure. You can contact Judy and learn more about the work of the Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors at rockpa, which is rockpa.org, and on our website at sylviaglobal.com. You'll see Judy's smiling face there and be able to also see the video, I Am a Philanthropist. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and we hope you'll join us again soon. Judy, thank you so much. Continue the good work that you're doing, and we'll stay in touch.
Thanks so much, Gail.
Okay, my pleasure. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Hello, Gail.
Hi.
Hi. I hope that was okay.
That was perfect. Thank you so much.
Oh, you